What do CEOs need to know about sales these days? A lot. Outdated sales strategies and tactics plague most companies today. Listen to what innovative CEOs and experts have to say about how to change all that with Sales Talk for CEOs. Welcome to Sales Talk for CEOs. Today, we're going to talk about something that is on every CEO's mind, and that is how to hire A players. Everyone I've talked to lately is hiring, believe it or not, even though what you hear out there is there's major layoffs. I think that's in the bigger companies, but the size clients I work with, which are tech companies under $100 million that have a business-to-business complex sale, they're hiring. And I think it's good for everybody to know that. But what the CEOs that I talk to are struggling with is, how do I get an A player? We don't want to hire another person that doesn't work out. It's expensive, time consuming, and we really need a way to hire A players. I agree. And it's not easy, especially because there are quite a few salespeople out of work right now. Even some of the very best ones are out of work because of these big companies laying people off. So how do we get through all of those and find the best? Keeping in mind that the best for your company might not be the same as the best for another company. So we've got to figure that out first. So I am so excited to have my very close friend and hiring expert, also a mindset expert, Jamie Crosby with me here today. She is a three-time author. She's a speaker. She's recently done a TED Talk that has over 1 million views. So I am super excited to have her here today so that we can have a very frank conversation about what CEOs need to know about hiring A players in this marketplace. And yes, we'll talk about AI and how it's impacting hiring. Welcome to the show, Jamie.
Thank you so much for having me, Alice. I love being with you.
So fun, because we are going to have such a great conversation. But before we dive into the topic, Jamie, just tell everyone what Proactivate does. So Jamie's the founder of Proactivate, and she's had a long career in talent. So tell us what Proactivate does and who they do it for.
Absolutely. So we serve in the marketplace, helping companies find go-to-market talent, just the best of the best A players in revenue generating roles, whether it be sales, marketing, sales operations, or all the way up to C-level, chief revenue officers. We work across all industries, but really specialize in sales and helping organizations really find top performing sales professionals and revenue generating professionals.
And like me, your company really specializes in helping mid-sized companies do that because, yeah, the giants are out there, right? But
absolutely.
The mid-sized companies really need the help.
I agree. And, you know, I mean, we both have worked with really big name brands and bigger companies, but the meat of what we do, just like you, is those medium-sized companies. And it's helping them expose them to people who are working and winning and doing really well. And yes, as you said, there are some anomalies. There are some great people who might not be working, but to expose them to people they couldn't get to find the best of the best talent for their team. And as you said, that doesn't mean it's the same as someone else's team.
Yes, exactly. We have to know what best means for our company. It won't be the same. So I want to kind of start with like framing this up a little bit, because I feel like there's still a lot of companies out there that don't really understand the whole hiring process or how to even source candidates. And that can be super troublesome, right? So if we're not kind of starting there and giving them a baseline, because what I still see a lot is companies putting ads out there in many different places and taking applications.
I
hear it. So what's wrong with that? Why doesn't that work?
Well, I will simply say it's like trying to find the best of the worst. And I hate to say it that directly, but it really is that. When you're taking applications, you're limiting yourself typically to the unemployed market. And not to say there can't be some great people, but it's a needle in the haystack. And as we know, the unemployed market is under 5%, around 4.5%. And so you're limiting yourself to that. Why not expose ourselves to 100% of the market, the people who are working and winning and doing well, where this would be the next step in their career? Because in most cases, especially for go-to-market talent, if they're unemployed, even though there are some companies laying off, I mean, the heartbeat of a company is the revenue-generating roles. So those usually are the last to be laid off. And if they're laid off, it's typically the bottom third of the sales force or those types of roles. So number one is we've got to expose ourselves to the talent that is currently doing well, where this would be the next step for their career or an effort. And then you said it really well. What is the best for our company? I think a lot of times we don't know that. We know who our ICP, our ideal client profile is, but not necessarily our ideal candidate profile. And it starts there. We got to know what we're looking for to know if we found them.
Oh my gosh, it's so true. You can't see it if you don't know what you're looking for, right? You may look right past it, but yeah. And I really want to just stay on this for a minute about taking applications, right? Yes, you might find that needle in the haystack, but it's really an arduous process. First of all, you have to sort through so many applications that are not the right ones.
Yeah.
And then you're thinking like, why is this person out of work, right? Because great revenue generators are rarely ever out of work. If somebody lays them off because they're stupid enough to lay off their best seller,
right,
then someone else will snatch them up in a heartbeat.
Yeah.
So we just really have to know that it's going to be very rare that a great seller, a great sales ops person, a great customer success leader, a great CRO is going to be out of work. It's just rare. And so we have to go to that next level, like you mentioned, and start to look for the best candidates. However, we can't do that if we don't know what an ideal candidate is. So let's talk about that for a minute, because it's really useless to just go look for people with a title CRO that are in tech and think that those are the ones you should recruit, right?
Right, right. And I want to just add, if I may, one thing to what you just said, because I think that this was really the inspiration behind me starting Proactivate 20 years ago, is what you just said. So I just want to add to that, because I was, as you know, VP of sales at CareerBuilder, and we used outside help to find top talent because we couldn't find people that were the best of the best salespeople that were just responding to ads, which was our website, right? But we didn't want the people who were responding to job posts. We wanted to find people or just putting their resume online. We wanted to find people who weren't looking. And then, of course, I did use traditional recruiters and saw many gaps with that traditional model. So that's how Proactivate came to be. It was because it generally does not work to just depend on people responding.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. So you figured that out and you knew to find the best of the best. You had to go find them yourself. You had to deploy recruiters to do that. But you knew what best looked like. So how did you know that for yourself? And let's talk about how these CEOs can help their sales leaders and sales teams figure that out.
Well, so I think what best looks like, and it is, as you said, very different for every organization, but the way to figure that out is by asking yourself or working with a partner who would help you to determine a lot of questions. I mean, we have like 29 questions that we ask to help companies build their ideal candidate profile. And it's way more than a job description. I think we know it because we have a job description, but it's so much more than that. And it's like a job description on steroids, right? But it's asking yourself the tough questions of, you know, what does a top performer look like? And part of that could be profiling top performers on the team, but there might not be some, or it might be a smaller company building a team. And so what does it look like? What's the formula for success in this role? And then what does it look like to have someone in that role who performs well? What non-negotiable background and requirements do they need? Now, here's where most companies get stuck, I think, because it does take a lot of digging to build this. And you know, that's the first step of our process, as you know, is to know what we're looking for. And part of that is, what's your story in the marketplace to attract top talent, right? Yeah. Because if we're going to find people who aren't looking, then you know your competitive differentiators as it stands to sell your business. But what about to attract your number one asset, which is people? So what's your story? Why would they want to come work there? So that's part of us building that ideal candidate profile as well. What's a good cultural fit? And then here's the biggest thing. 80% of their success is not just skill set. I mean, in fact, it's only 20% skill set. It's 80% mindset. So what are the mindset components that make someone successful there? Like perseverance or optimism or how they overcome challenges. And so those are also really important pieces to identify in the ideal candidate profile and figuring out what's your best. Most companies stop at the skill set components and they're just thinking this educational background, this many years of experience. It goes so much deeper.
Yeah. Well, you have done some great talks on mindset, which I have been able to be in the audience and love how you approach mindset. In fact, your TED talk is about that as well. So we are going to talk some more about that. But before we go there, I want to go back to a couple of things you said about building this ideal candidate profile.
Okay.
One, most companies stop at how many years of experience, what educational level, can they lift 50 pounds, you know, can they travel, right?
Right.
Like, that is like a typical HR job description, which is the least of your worries, right? Because honestly, if they couldn't lift 50 pounds and they didn't have an advanced degree or the background in science, but they had the right mindset, were curious and a great learner and had worked in your industry, you should probably talk to them, right? So I think we limit ourselves a bit too much with these bullets that we put on these job descriptions of requirements that people must meet. And especially for women, which we'll talk about that in a minute. Like, it's hard to attract women if you're bulleting all these things that they have to meet. They're going to be like, oh, I don't fit that. I'm not going to apply, even though they might be great for the job, but we'll go there in a few minutes. So, all right. So let's get past that. So this is what I tell my CEOs and sales leaders. And I probably learned this from you so long ago that I don't even remember that, you know, it's just become part of what I do now all the time. But I say to them, tell me about this person. What's their personality like? Are they laid back? Are they go, go, go? You know, are they a family person? Have they played sports? Do they like to read? Like, tell me about this person. What would this ideal person be like? So jump in on that, Jamie.
Yes. No, I love it because, I mean, it makes me think too, like those are part of the questions, right? They're so much deeper than the standard. And it's like, what kind of leadership would they respond to? You know, thinking about-
Do they need like micromanaging, or do you want a person who like is a figure it out person and goes and does it on their own and maybe even takes a risk sometimes and gets in trouble for it? Like, what kind of person do you want?
Yes. And that's such a good point too, because some of it's like, what's the capacity of the leader right then?
Yes.
Because the capacity might be less, and then they want someone who really doesn't need a lot of handholding, or the capacity could be more where they're like, yes, we'd have to teach someone in the industry, but I have the capacity to do that. So it's a bigger conversation. And yes, like, what does it feel like? What's the culture there? And what do you want this person to represent for you?
And what's great also, Jamie, like you said, is if you have highly successful salespeople at your company, you can look at them and say, well, here are their qualities. Now, of course, they're all unique individuals, but there will be some qualities that they have in common.
Yes.
And then you can take those into what you're looking for in a candidate.
Now, absolutely.
If you don't have that, though, I think just kind of imagining, right, what kind of person this is would be helpful. So you can see it. Like, is this a smiley person or is this a serious person, right? What other kinds of things?
All of those details matter so much. I mean, it matters so much. And this makes me laugh. I oftentimes liken recruiting the right people to dating. It's very much,
I agree.
I'm single, but it's very much similar because a lot of times first of all, it'd be like going on a trip and not knowing where you're going. How do you know when you arrive? So you really need to know what you're looking for. Mm-hmm. But also when you're qualifying talent that are in revenue generating roles, they're really good at selling themselves in the interview process, right? Oh, yeah. That's like a first date. And so it goes so much beyond, as you're saying, the bullet points. And if you know that from the beginning of what you're looking for, and like you said, you know, are they bubbly? How they show up in a room, how they carry themselves, just their demeanor, how does it feel? If you know those things more clearly, then you're going to be more discerning and make less mistakes.
Yeah.
And when you approach hiring talent from this perspective, it's like recognizing that talent is your number one asset. So how do I protect that? How do I proactively go to market to find these types of people versus waiting to when I have an opening and I'm losing revenue and then I'm desperate and I'm just looking for the first person who meets these few bullets?
Well, it's sad to say that this is what happens way too often, right? And this is why I also try to tell companies to build bench strength. You may have all the salespeople you need right at this moment, but where are those people that you would hire if you needed another salesperson for whatever reason? Absolutely. And this is something you can do by going to trade shows, which you're doing anyway, but look at the other salespeople around you that are at the other booths and what are they doing? When you spot a great salesperson, you get their name and number and you stay in touch with them as a leader, right? As a CEO or a sales leader, you find great salespeople, you stay in touch with them. And you should always have 3, 4, or 5 that you're kind of nurturing along that you think, wow, that's the kind of person I want to work at my company. I don't have a place for them right now, but as soon as I do, I'm going to reach out to them and see if they want to change. Absolutely. And I think building that bench strength is so important. What are some other ways companies can build bench strength?
I love this question. I don't know. I know you probably know most things about my life and my business because we're great friends, but I just have to stop because this is going to be funny for the listeners. Have I ever told you that the name of the company for Proactivate, which is all about having a proactive approach, right? It's revenue insurance, so to speak, used to be, before I actually went into business, on my business plan was Sales Bench.
Oh no, I did not know that. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, it was Sales Bench. And I called the lawyer and said, okay, I want to start, you know, because it was all about a proactive approach to helping companies prepare or be prepared for if their top performer were to unexpectedly leave tomorrow or get promoted, or to be able to make decisions on C players. Right? You want to hire more slowly and fire more quickly if they're not performing. And so to be able to replace C players with A players and then to help grow and expand. That was, you know, the whole model. I called the lawyer, Alice, and said, Sales Bench, you know, look it up. And he kept asking me to repeat myself. And he thought he's like, okay, I'm sorry, but we're going to have to think of a new name because it sounds like you're saying sales.
Ah, bench. Gotcha.
I'm like, I don't know. That could have maybe been a great name, but how can companies do it more proactively? I completely agree. The mindset behind that, the way to do that is to think, where are top performing salespeople out in the marketplace today naturally looking for leads or business acumen or in their daily job? And so that's how we approach finding top talent. And, you know, it's a customized strategy built around that ideal candidate profile, but it could be trade shows. It could be networking events. As we talk to top salespeople, we're asking for their rankings list. And then we now have a library of top performing salespeople. But always be looking, right? Always be having conversations. And as you ask people, you know, where they rank, then they're going to share other people's information, or you see someone, or people call you and they're trying to pitch you, and you might give them a chance because they're really good. You might just be interested in seeing how they might be for you one day. That was always my philosophy at Career Builder, is every area sales manager I had needed to know who their next three people were. And it caused people to make better hiring decisions because they were more selective because they had a bench, and to make faster decisions on poor performers that were costing the company money.
Right, because they weren't worried about how they were going to replace them, right?
So, exactly. Yeah.
And I've had some instances where a salesperson who was calling on the sales leader or someone at the company was a really good salesperson.
Yes.
And so they knew the industry because they were calling on the industry, and they become someone you put on the bench and nurture for future, right? They already know your company a bit because they're calling on you. So I think that there are many ways to build bench strength, and both you and I are urging all CEOs to make sure their sales leaders are always building bench strength, because what you never want to do is hire someone in a rush, and you never want to keep poor performers longer than you need to because there'll be nobody else, right?
Exactly. You know, exactly. And you have the data. This is what I would say to a CEO. You have the data, you know, your typical turnover. We know just on average in sales, it's 30%. So you could base it on that if you don't know your data. But in general, you know what growth you're expecting. So you know, okay, let's say you're going to add 10 markets, then you need to interview 30 people throughout the year. So I always like to say, consider C players currently, growth plans, and any current open positions, and then multiply whatever that number is by three, because I think you need to interview three really great people to know you've picked the best of the best. And obviously the number starts way higher than that. You're qualifying down to the three best of the best and then making a selection. And so if you know that over the next 12 months, maybe you need to interview 36 people to fill 12 roles, then do that regularly. Have a cadence on a monthly basis to get a few really great people in front of you so that you do have revenue insurance, so to speak.
Yeah, it's part of what every great sales leader does.
Yes.
You don't have to tell a great sales leader to build bench strength. Now, you may be developing a great sales leader at your company because they're newer and, you know, still learning. That's part of what you teach them. They have to always build bench strength.
Yeah.
So important. All right. So let's go back and recap before we move on to the next thing, what the ideal candidate profile is made up of. So correct me if I'm wrong, but it's definitely those basic things that you feel are non-negotiable. They have to have X amount of years. Really think about that though. Why do they have to have X amount of years in your particular industry? But okay. Right. Whatever it is that you feel like they absolutely must have, some science background or some of this or some of that, those bullet points that you typically put on your job description, think very carefully about them, because remember, they're screening people out, those bullets, right?
Yeah.
So you have those. And then you have the personality. What is this person going to be like? You know, are they, like we said, are they a go-getter? Or are they kind of calm? Are they this or are they that? Like, what kind of person is this that you're going to bring into your organization that will fit into your culture and be right for this position, right? And think about your customer when you're doing this.
Yeah.
Is this a person who can have the amount of gravitas needed and either learn or know, you know, about the prospects they're calling on, what their day in a life is like, be sophisticated enough to interface with your customer at the level you want them to. Really be thinking about that as well. And then the third piece is mindset. So did I get them all?
I really think so. And I think, you know, the one thing I would add to this, that it's not really about the ideal candidate profile, but it is in a sense, because you need to really think about what's competitive comp in the marketplace, because you don't really want to bring someone on that's making a lot more than the role that you're offering, right? You want it to be a next step and an upgrade to them. So in that way, it becomes part of your ideal candidate profile.
Yeah, I agree, because we want to get the best player we can for the price that makes sense for our company, right? We don't want to overpay. And you know, I just had that situation with a young man. Someone referred to me because he was let go from a startup because they were paying him way too much. And it was a very complex sale. He had only been there 6 months. He needed at least 12 to 18 to close a deal, but they just simply couldn't afford to carry him on the payroll, and they let him go. And he was an A player, and you know, hard for him. But after we talked, and I said, look, if you're the investor and you don't understand a complex sale or a long sales cycle, and we overpaid you because, you know, the CEO made that decision, right? Because the CEO was still managing sales because it was a startup, to pay you $300,000 a year when what we could afford is $150,000.
Right.
You know, like you can't carry it's that on your right book.
Fit. Right.
It's not right fit. So I think it is part of ideal candidate. We want the best for what we can afford.
Yes.
And, you know, we can grow into something else, but you can't, don't go get a $300,000 player because they expect to make $300,000.
Exactly. It's no longer your ideal.
Yeah. And they don't fit in your ideal candidate profile. So actually I do, that is part of it. We have to be realistic about that. And you know, it's interesting. I don't want to get into a whole thing about compensation because it's so complicated and it's so individual. People always ask me, oh, do you have like a spreadsheet where I can do my comp? I go, wait, do not take somebody else's spreadsheet and do your comp. Your CFO needs to be involved in this. It has to do with your profit margins. It has to do with a lot of other financials at your company, your overhead, things like that, what the quota is. And then you have to back into it. I'm like, oh, people, if you need help with that, call one of us, because that is not something simple that you just do, or find someone else's spreadsheet.
Right. You just tap in there. Right. You say AI to develop your comp plan. No,
don't do it. Don't do it. Right. So comp plans do have to be decided, and they have to be right, and they have to be incentivizing and all of that. So when once we get that all together, that's great. But I want to dive now deep into your expertise area, which you've been studying for a long time and you speak about and you've written about, which is the mindset. And I think what's really hard here is people don't know how to interview very well, period.
Right.
But they don't know how to ask questions that reveal this candidate's mindset. So can we dive into that? Because I know you have some real ideas on it.
Yes, I feel so strongly about this. And it is because I've studied it and I know the value of it. I think, you know, I just want to lay out for the listeners, we have to have our ideal candidate profile, right? Then we have to have a strategy on how to find people that fit that profile. But then this is this next step that you're talking about, and it's how do I qualify based on this profile? And so it needs to be customized to your profile, right? Your qualification strategy. And as you said, Alice, most companies stop at the first component, which should be one of many components of qualifying talent. And it's just the skill set, right? They just want to know, do they have these experiences, background, skills. So the mindset component and the way to get to it is to also design customized questions around that, but they have to be interactive and behavioral based, right? So we believe strongly that past performance indicates future performance. So to ask behavioral based questions about real situations, and then also to simulate those, is how you dig deeper and qualify people under the surface.
Okay, and I'm going to pause you there for a minute because I do think that some people don't really understand what behavioral-based questions are.
Yeah.
And people are not trained on interviewing candidates, and they don't really do it very well or with any rigor or system or grading or all those other things that we probably won't have time to get into today. But for every component of the job, there needs to be a set of questions.
Yeah.
The easiest is the, do I have this education? Can I lift this many pounds? Can I travel? Right. Let your recruiter screen for that stuff, because it either is or it isn't. Right. But then when you get down to what kind of person is this and how do they respond in certain situations, and Are they a driver? Are they calm? Or all those things. You need a set of questions to find that out because, like we said earlier, it's like your first date. I can sit up, hold my tummy in, and look you in the eye for a dinner, right?
Right. It's their sales department showing up on the date. And I want to date the operations department. I want to know the real grit. Yeah.
So, okay. So that's fine. But then what after that? So you need those questions to discover these things. And of course, some of it's you're just going to watch the personality. And I'm like, if they don't smile on the interview, they probably won't smile in front of customers. No. So just get that through.
It's only downhill from here.
Right. So now we get to this very specific set of questions for mindset. And you mentioned behavioral. So let me give an example because I want everybody to be really clear on this.
Sure.
The difference between how would you handle this situation if it occurred? And in the past, have you had a situation like this and how did you handle it?
Exactly. And a lot of times non-behavioral questions are also just yes or no, but they're definitely not based on past if they're not behavioral based. So tell me about a time where you had a really challenging client interaction and how you handled it. Or tell me about the greatest challenge you've ever faced in your life and how you overcame it. I mean, it doesn't have to be just that tells you a whole lot. Or tell me about the deal you're most proud of closing and how you had to persevere through challenges to get it closed and how you overcame those, right? You're learning. I mean, these are the, if you look at.
And you know what? I like to ask them, tell me about the biggest deal you ever lost.
Yeah.
And I want to see if there's any emotion in that.
Yes. And what did you learn, right? You want to see, do they have a growth mindset?
Right.
I mean, you want to learn about their grit, their perseverance, their determination, how they handle and overcome challenges. Are they curious? And you can't do that by saying, are you curious? I mean, right?
Oh, you can, but I don't know what you're going to get there. Of course I'm curious.
Hopefully they're not, you know, if they say no, then you know you really don't have, you kind of have a dud here.
All right. So give us a few examples, right? So we're going to ask these behavioral-based questions and we're going to listen to the answers, but give me some specifics on mindset. So how would, if I had a closed mindset we're talking Carol Dweck for a minute here, which both Jamie and I, if you've never read Carol Dweck, D-W-E-C-K, we'll put it in the show notes. If you've never read her book on mindset, then you better read it because it is a must for hiring managers. You've got to know and understand that, right? For yourself and for others. And she even has a very quick quiz that you can do. But let's talk about what it sounds like when someone's telling you about a mindset. So when you ask somebody a sales question, what would it sound like if they had, I'll actually give you one. So when you didn't hit your quota, let's say they told us that, when you didn't hit your quota, what was the reason for that? What would closed mindset sound like?
They would be giving excuses and it would be about something with the company.
Something external to them.
Yeah, it would be external excuses. It would be the territory, maybe even the comp plan wasn't incenting the right things, or we weren't fulfilling our sales fast enough. So I just didn't want it would be excuses that had nothing to do with them.
Okay. And then if the same question was asked to someone with a growth mindset, what would they say?
Yeah. So I think conversely, someone who has a growth mindset is going to know their formula for success. So they're going to be able to say, well, I determined what one thing I learned from this situation is that I was the month I didn't hit quota or the quarter I didn't hit quota, I wasn't doing the right activity. I realized that it takes 8 appointments a week to exceed my quota. And I looked at what other top performers were doing and what their formula was. And I decided I need to try that. And so when I did, I realized this is the formula. And since then, I've now been exceeding quota because I know what it takes to win. Or they could say I was doing the right amount of activity, but I realized I was not showing up and earning credibility well initially in the sales call to then get good data to be able to sell well, right? To be able to show them value. So I switched how I show up and start a meeting and or how I overcome objections. But they'll know. They'll know and they'll take responsibility. And
that's the key word, right?
Yes, responsibility.
Yeah, they take responsibility. And yes, there certainly could have been a crappy compensation plan and market forces that were against them. But and they might mention those, but not as the reason. But it's like, I realized these market forces were working against me, so I changed the way I was doing things. So yes, it's just so completely different. And so you've really got to listen. And yeah, so that means you can't do a 20 minute or a 30 minute interview. Like this is an hour and it's probably several times with several different people asking some of the same questions repeatedly. And then every one of the team members at your company writing down the answers to the questions they got and scoring this individual on skill set, personality traits, and, you know, not just personality, but just the kind of, you know, person maybe that they are and how they fit in the culture, and then also scoring them on mindset.
Yes. And one thing I want to add to this is the component of doing simulation evaluations, of seeing them in action in key components of the role. And you can do this in any role. Even if it was a CFO role, you could have them do a financial plan or role play how they would present cutting back budget. Or, I mean, there are a lot of things you can do, but for sales and revenue generating roles, it's really, really, this is another great way to see if someone has a growth mindset, because it's not just about how they perform in the role play. Let's say you're role playing how to overcome objections or getting a meeting or whatever it is. You know that they're not going to be as good probably in the role play as they would normally because they're nervous, and that's fine. But you learn so much about people through this, more than just the actual role play. Do they ask for feedback? And then when you give feedback, do they say, could I try that again? And then do they incorporate it? Or if you gave them a script, let's say, and said, this is our sales process, do they show up to do a role play in their own way? Or do they take what you gave them and learn? And it's just all interesting, right? It's not always black or white decision, but it's interesting because I think you learn if someone's a learner or if they think they have a better way, or if they are curious to learn other ways, or if they want feedback. Those are growth mindset components.
And yeah, I agree. I like the role play. I like giving some sort of an assignment that shows that they can put some ideas together and feed something back to you. It doesn't have to be perfect. Really don't need a PowerPoint, you know, and but, you know, just need to see that they can synthesize ideas and put it back to you. And I love the role play, but I will say most companies just simply don't do it.
No, they don't. And that's why I think that that's a really important, if you're not going to do it, and that's okay to realize, hey, we're just not good at this, or we don't have time for that, then get a partner to help you find people that does do it, right? That incorporates these things so that they can then serve you up people who have made it through this process, and you can just pick the best and go through your shorter process within your company.
Exactly. You can have somebody do the whole front end of the process for you, narrow it down to the three best candidates, and you're so excited because you'd want to hire all three of them, right? And that's, I just want to, you know, put a little plug in here for a moment, because that is what you have done for me and my clients over and over and over again. By using Proactivate, we have made the process so much easier because we only get presented with the best of the best. And we never have to worry. These candidates will be a great fit. You could hire any one of them and they would be fantastic, but probably one is a better fit culturally, or maybe just has something that you need more than the other. That's the position I always want to be in, right? I don't want to do all this hard work. I'm not an expert in it. My clients are not experts in hiring. And nor do they know how to spot an A player when they see one. I mean, maybe they could out in the wild, but out of the bunch of candidates trying to,
it just takes so much time.
Find one, you know, it does. It takes so much time. So get some help, I guess is what I'm saying. If you can't do this on your own, you know, please talk to one of us and we'll help guide you. There's lots of things you can do to help yourselves do a better job hiring. Yes. But in the end, Your time is extremely valuable. And if you can have someone else do these major portions of the process and just dish you up the best, I mean, woohoo, who wouldn't want that, right? You think, oh, well, that's expensive. Well, first of all, it's not really. And secondly, your time is worth way more than you're going to pay for this to happen. So yeah. I think it's just something to consider. But anyway, that's my shameless plug for Jamie's company, who I've been using for many, many, many years to help my clients hire. All right, so here we go. We're winding up and we have now figured out what our ideal candidate profile is. And we have figured out that we need to ask really good questions.
Yes.
But how do we get the candidates, Jamie? And how, how on earth do we get a pool of candidates that is diverse? Like, I am just going to say it. I don't want, you know, to see 15 white 30-year-old males. Right. I would like a little more diversity in the candidate pool, and nothing against them. I'd like to see some of them, but I'd also like to see some people who are more diverse, because I know as a CEO that bringing diverse people into my organization helps us grow, helps us think differently, right? So I don't want everybody to look and talk and think the same way and have the same experience and the same background. I need diversity. So, all right. How do we source candidates? Let's say we're not going to use a recruiter. What are some of the best things we can do?
Okay, great question. And I love the diversity piece, because so many times we just hire people who look like us and sound like us and are us, because we haven't started with what's the ideal. So you just kind of hire people you like. It's not like a really clear process. So now we're giving you some tools to expand beyond that, right? And we can't go through all that great qualification without actually having people to qualify. So great question. I think—
Oh, wait. And I just thought of something. Earlier I said about hiring more women in sales, which I know you and I are both huge proponents of. And I said I would get back to that. And so this is the piece, everybody, where we're going to talk about it. And one of the things that you can do just to start with is, after you get all your qualifications down on paper and you're thinking about it, think about how you put that out into the universe. Like, so you post this job description that you wrote with all these bullet points on it, on all these different places, including LinkedIn. And you wonder why you don't get any female candidates. So there are some tools out there, and I'll put them into the show notes, where you can run those through a little grader, and it will tell you, oh, you can make this appeal more to women by adding this or changing that, remove the bullets. It's going to give you suggestions and really just how to make it appeal to anyone better, make your job description appeal better. So, you know, don't just stop there. Like, think about what you're putting out there in the world, because what you put out is going to regulate sort of what you get back.
Yes. Yes. See, it all relates to life on some level, right? And that is a great way to use AI too, is like, how do you, you know, screen that out and make it more attractive to a diverse group of people. But to answer your
question, let's say we've done that and we've got a really good job description out there. Okay, I posted it on CareerBuilder and Indeed.
Okay, now come on, guys. Hopefully we've moved past this, right? The post and pray method does not work.
Post and pray method, I love it.
Right? You're limiting yourself to less than 5% of the marketplace that way. So the way to find people is to first start with your ideal candidate profile, and then think, where are these people naturally in the market currently working and winning? Where do they go? Where do they go online to look for leads or business acumen? Maybe they're online looking for selling power. And so you advertise there, or you're not posting where unemployed people go. You're thinking, where are they? Are they at certain networking events? Are they at certain trade shows? Where do they work? What companies might they work for where this would be a great next step, or they're selling to similar industries and direct sourcing? I mean, that's, you know, for us, one of the biggest ways, because we have time to do that, right, is going to find them where they are. But the whole mindset behind developing a recruiting strategy that's customized to your ideal candidate profile is thinking, where are these people? So for us, that's what we do. We think about where could we advertise that would get diverse candidates, if that's important to a company. Where are these people naturally in their business professional life? And how do we network with them or advertise there? Or what types of conferences are they at? What companies might they work for? And then, of course, because we've been in business 20 years, and if you have access to this through your own internal or partners, you know, we have an extensive referral network and database that are not unemployed people, but people to network with that are working and winning. And maybe it's a sales rankings library or things like that, right? But how do you tap into other networks of really professional people?
Yeah.
And that's where you want to go find them.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. We have to know where they are to get in front of them. And remember, they may not be interested in changing jobs. They may be doing really well and perfectly happy. So that's why, going back to the beginning where Jamie said, what is your story?
Right.
You better have that down. What is your story that would attract someone away from a job where they're doing really well and making a lot of money, right?
Yes.
What's
yes.
your story? So you better have that ready. One other thing that yes. I really like to do, and I tell the CEOs to do this. One, when you're hiring, gather your whole company at your next company meeting or whatever and say, we're hiring.
Yes.
This is the position.
Yes.
Right? This is the kind of person that we're looking for. Forget your bullet points for a minute. We're looking for a person like this who has the mindset of growth like we all do, right?
Yes.
That will fit into our community of people here at this company. If you know anyone like this, here's where this job is posted. Please pass it on, right? Then next, I tell these CEOs, you belong to all these organizations with other CEOs in them. Go tell them that you're looking for someone, right? And you're not trying to poach from them, but you're trying to poach from their network. They may know somebody working somewhere
right.
that they could recommend to you. And then tell your brother, your sister, your aunt, anybody who's working,
yes.
your network, your friends, we're hiring. Do you know someone who looks like this?
Yes. Right? And Alice, I can't believe I didn't mention this, because this is the best way. I mean, truly, if you can do it, it doesn't always work in terms of the timing, or maybe you have so many needs that you can't find the person this way. But when you get people that are referred by people inside your company, that's the very best, because they really want to bring people forward that will continue the success and make them proud. And so always, this is like one of the obvious, right? That I'm thinking like, well, what do we do for our clients? We can't do that part, but this is what you should do
right.
for yourself. And it's always the best way.
Absolutely. All right. Well, we've got to wind up, but I can't leave this conversation without asking you about AI, because I know everybody's thinking, oh, maybe I don't even need a recruiter anymore. Maybe AI is just going to find me candidates. Maybe AI right. is going to do this. Maybe AI is going to do that. Okay. In the world of talent, what is AI actually going to do for us? And what is it not going to do for us?
I'm laughing because I'm thinking like, are we gonna depend on AI to go find our next boyfriend? I mean, really? Come on.
Well, maybe.
No, I mean, you can. It makes us more efficient. It definitely can make us more efficient. It makes us more efficient, right, in our business, and it can cut down on things that could take longer, like building your ideal candidate profile. You could put some ideas in there and things in there, and then you could say, can you help me build this out into
yes.
something greater? Or could you help me think of some questions that would be really meaningful to understand, behavioral-based questions that are mindset related, to see if someone would be qualified based on this profile? Yes. Or what networking events might someone with this profile be at? So those are the things that I think it can do for us. It can help us take, you know, an hour and a half interview and present it to the client with the highlights of why this person is really a great candidate to interview. So that makes us more efficient. It makes things take less time, but it certainly doesn't interview for us and hire for us. Because again, and this is really, really important, salespeople know how to sell themselves in an interview, right? And so you can't use a computer to help qualify and dig under the surface. It could do the, do they have this, this, and this? It could give you an initial pool of 50 people possibly, but it's not going to do those in-depth behavioral customized qualifications, the interviews, right? Where you're digging deeper into skill set and mindset and simulations. It won't do that.
Yeah. It, well, and it certainly can't look them in the eye and see what, you know, whether they're smiling or not. Right. Not yet anyway. And it can't take them to lunch and see whether they know how to use, you know, a knife and fork.
I mean, I have done that. I have, yes, I have a great story on that for another time.
Oh my gosh. So AI is definitely there to help. And I think there are many ways you can train a ChatGPT or whatever tool you use to help you develop your profiles and ask you questions you haven't thought of, make you think differently, help you find diverse places to look for candidates, help you write questions. It can do a lot of those things. It can probably even screen, you know, the initial resumes to some degree, right? At a very top level and do some of those things. And it could probably even do some video interviewing for the very, very first, you know, like, can you lift 50 pounds and can you travel and things like that. But it's not going to be that person to person, look me in the eye.
You've got to have the interactive.
Right. And see whether I'm smiling and whether I have a personality and whether I know how to really interact and engage and all of that. All right. Well, oh my gosh, we're running over. We got to go. I have three questions for you.
Yeah.
And the first one is, what's a book that you think every CEO should read? It doesn't have to be a business book.
Every CEO should read. I am going to say a book that's not, I mean, at first I was thinking Grit or just certain, you know, just certain books that, or even Carol Dweck's book. I think because as CEOs, we need to, in order to get the best of the best talent and have companies that are exceeding goals, we've got to be in our best place, right? When we've got to have our mindset be really strong. If you haven't read The Pivot Year, it's one excerpt for every day of the year, and it will make you think. And it will make you think about your company's bigger purpose, impact, who you want to be, how you're showing up, just more important, bigger picture things. And I love it. I'm currently reading it right now. And every day, I mean, it takes not a lot of time, but it is deep. It is deep and it will.
Yeah. I saw your post about that. I hadn't read that yet. So it's definitely on my list.
Okay. You're going to love it.
All right, good. All right. Next question. What's a podcast you listen to because it makes you think differently?
Well, yours. And I'm not just saying that, but I mean, truly, I think that if you want to think differently about business and be, you know, a CEO that really comes to the table with the highest level of strategy and tools to put things in action, I would say your podcast.
Thank you. All right. Yeah. Last thing, what do CEOs need to know to win in this market?
I mean, you've got to know how to do what we just talked about, because the number one differentiator you have is your people. And we all know this, right? But you've got other competitive differentiators that you go to market with, but if you don't have the right people to take it to market. So you've got to know how to proactively protect and grow your number one asset, which is people.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. So great to spend this time with you today, digging into how to hire A players. Thank you.
Thank you, Alice. I love it. I love talking to you and just bringing value to the market for you and your clients. So what a great talk. Thank you for having me.
Oh, you're welcome. Absolutely. If you enjoyed the show, please like and subscribe, and we'll see you next week.